I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Kent Jones. He's writer and director of the film Hitchcock Truffaut, which opens tonight at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Hi. So this is a documentary based on the famous conversation between filmmakers François Truffaut and Alfred Hitchcock, French and British filmmakers. Hitchcock worked very much in Hollywood. How did their conversation come about in the first place?
Well, Truffaut was in New York doing press for his film Jules and Jim. And he was doing all kinds of interviews with people from all different kinds of publications. And they got around to the inevitable question, who are the directors that, you know, have influenced you? And who are the filmmakers that mean the most to you? And Truffaut mentioned Jean Renoir and some other people. But then when he mentioned Alfred Hitchcock, invariably the answer, or the response that he got, rather, would be, you're kidding. Alfred Hitchcock, how could that possibly be? And so he heard it so much, and he spent so much time talking to the people and saying, you're wrong about this guy. He's a great, great artist, and here's why, and spending like an hour doing it. But he decided that it was time to write a book that would be comprised of interviews with Hitchcock where they would talk about his entire career film by film and in the process illustrate why he was really foundational to cinema. And so Hitchcock got the letter from Truffaut, and he agreed, and he was very moved by the offer, and he arranged for the conversations to happen on the Universal lot in his office over 8 days, and it was recorded professionally. And that book became, you know, one of the few really important film books, I think, in the history of film books. That's a short history. But it's, you know, cornerstone for a lot of people, myself included.
It's funny because, I mean, by the time I was in college, which wasn't all that recently, Hitchcock was already seen as a true artist, and there were Hitchcock film societies, and people just loved his films. And that reputation came out partly because of Truffaut.
That's
how
right.
was Hitchcock seen before that?
Well, I mean, these things are always very fluid. I think that there were, you know, obviously people who recognized that he was incredibly talented. There were a few people who recognized that he was a genuinely great artist, too. But in general, the idea was that he was the master of suspense, that he could deliver a fun and, you know, surprising night out at the movies on a Saturday night or something like that. And, of course, it's all complicated by the fact that he, you know, directors of that generation developed these personas in order to protect themselves within the studio system protect their own freedom, their own artistic freedom. And they did it by hiding under the cloak of unpretentiousness. You know, for Howard Hawks, it was just kind of like, oh, gosh, I'm just a storyteller. Sorry, I got a truck going by. You know, oh, gosh, I'm just a storyteller. I'm just trying to tell a story. John Ford, it was just, you know, oh, gee, I just make Westerns. And for Hitchcock, it was, I'm the master of suspense. The MacGuffin, actors are cattle, et cetera, that kind of thing. Kind of disinterested mastery, you know. And so that kind of, you know, and plus he was a TV star, you know. And all those things, I think, contributed to the situation. You know, on the one hand, they protected him. On the other hand, they sort of prolonged the idea that he was a guy who was just delivering, you know, thrills and...
Yeah, thriller suspense movies, like genre. It's like literary fiction versus genre fiction. I mean, it's interesting. Hitchcock was born in 1899, and as you show in the film, he really grew up with the medium of film. I mean, it was born around the time that he was born, and he was very much a product of the silent era. And in fact, he directed the first, I didn't know this, the first British talking film, but silent films were a very profound influence for him. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a big part of my movie because, I mean, you know, there's something that two filmmakers, and, you know, my movie is all filmmakers. I wanted it that way. I didn't want to have experts or friends or actors and actresses. I wanted to just have filmmakers because it's a discussion between two filmmakers about filmmaking. So I wanted to keep it that way and prolong the discussion and bring it into the present, you know. And so there are two filmmakers in my movie who actually make variations on the same point. One of them is Arnaud de Poisson, a great French filmmaker, who says, you know, Truffaut recognized that there was this lost secret of the art of cinema and that it was really known only to the people who started in silent movies. And what he means by that is that they thought in terms of the image only and in terms of visual storytelling only. In other words, they didn't rely on sound or they didn't think in terms of I guess I'll just cover all my bases and put it together in the editing room. They thought about each image and how each image would fit with the next one, with the one behind it and the one ahead of it. And so then James Gray later in the movie is talking about Vertigo, and he's talking specifically about the scene where James Stewart has followed Kim Novak to the art museum in San Francisco, and she's sitting there looking at the painting. And for, you know, very compelling reasons, you don't see her face looking at the painting. You just see James Stewart looking at her looking at the painting. And James says, James Gray, that is, says, now me, you know, he said, I'll bet you that Hitchcock didn't even shoot her, her face. Now me, I probably would have done that. He said, and then he says, you know, we're not that good. We don't understand the power of the image the way that he does. We cover ourselves, in other words, and give ourselves the out of saying, well, maybe I'll use that and maybe I won't, but I guess I'll shoot it anyway.
Right.
James is being very self-deprecating when he says that because, but James is that way. But, you know, the movies are made differently now, and that's another thing that I wanted to get at in my movie. You know, the relationship with actors has really changed fundamentally. That's, you know, a big shift in movies that started after the war, as Martin Scorsese points out in the film. And the give and take between directors and actors is very different now. But, and that's a factor, so is obviously the factor of sound and all the elaborate things that you can do with it and all that. But,
right. Yeah,
it's true. You know, I mean, silent movies, the people who started in silence only thought in terms of the visual storytelling and were thinking in terms of what you were going to see on screen only.
Well, yeah, and I mean, here you have Hitchcock, who I hadn't seen. I mean, I'd heard of them, but I'd never actually seen his storyboards. He was an absolutely. I mean, if he had just decided I'm not going to do film, I'm just going to be a visual artist. He's an amazing visual artist.
Well, they're not all his. I mean, and a lot of people do storyboards. He was a really fine visual artist, but the point is that. And also, you know, there's a very good book about Hitchcock by Bill Crone called Hitchcock at Work, in which he points out that, you know, some of the storyboards don't conform exactly to what he shot on the set because, of course, again, you're getting into the question of his public image versus the reality. So he tried to create the impression that he would just shoot, you know, everything that he had, written, you know, drawn on file cards or something like that, and he was bored when he was on the set. Again, I don't think it's true. I don't think that you could make the movies that he made and just sit there on the set and say, right. You know, cut, you know, set up the next one. But on the other hand, yeah, he fought specifically. He fought in terms of very, very specific images. He knew the lenses and how those images would look with those lenses versus another lens, and the light and the color and, you know, he's a person who was really, really impassioned by and devoted to the development of his art.
Meanwhile, François Truffaut was first a film critic, and he was absolutely passionate about film from the earliest age. How did he go from being a film critic to a filmmaker?
Well, he was part of the generation of French filmmakers that became known as the French New Wave, the Nouvelle Vague, and they all started as critics. That's Truffaut, along with Jean-Luc Godard, Jacques Rivette, Eric Rohmer, Claude Chabrol. And they all wrote for the magazine Cahiers du Cinéma, which started after the war. I mean, the situation after the war was unusual because there were all these movies, all these American movies and movies from, you know, other allied countries, but specifically, you know, Hollywood films that obviously you couldn't see during the occupation, the German occupation, and then suddenly they just flooded into the country. And that really laid the groundwork for what became Cahiers du Cinéma, which is the magazine that really crystallized the idea of the director as the guiding force behind the movie, as opposed to, I don't know what, the producer, the story, the actors, you know, et cetera, stuff. I mean, now, it doesn't mean that all directors were like that. It just means that certain ones were, and they, you know, called them authors. The French word for author is auteur. So the politique des auteurs was their kind of slogan or, you know, official verbiage that they cooked up to describe it. And then it kind of was transported to America and, you know, became the auteur theory when Andrew Saras wrote his book, The American Cinema. And now it's just plain auteurism when it's referred to at all. But the thing about those guys is that even when they were critics, they were already preparing for filmmaking.
Yeah.
You can feel it in their writing. And it's a very particular kind of criticism that they were practicing. They were like waving the flag of individualism. And of course, you know, they became filmmakers, and that's exactly the kind of movies they made.
We're talking to Kent Jones about the film Hitchcock-Truffaut. And one of the things that came up that I found really fascinating in the conversation between Hitchcock and Truffaut was their very different ways of working. Hitchcock had this tightly controlled story that was laid out and storyboarded, although maybe not quite to the extent that people think, but, you know, as you said, but pretty much laid out before the shooting began. And It turns out that he really questioned whether he should have experimented more. And he said this thing that was just kind of stunning. He said, and because so many novelists say this, if once you start working with their characters, they will tell you where to go, and the story could change. And Hitchcock didn't necessarily want the story to change because he already had it. And this was a conflict. Meanwhile, Truffaut is totally loose. He's writing after having dinner with the actors the night before. He's writing late into the night before shooting a scene. And that kind of spontaneity and openness to improvisation is diametrically opposed. And here were these two incredible filmmakers who so admired each other and who were so different.
Yeah. But again, part of that has to do with the fact that they're coming at a different time, very different circumstances, because Hitchcock is a filmmaker who was operating within the studio system. And within the studio system, the kind of experimentation that he's talking about was not really possible. I mean, Howard Hawks, I guess I would say, made it possible within the confines of the work that he did, you know, within the stories that he took on, within The Big Sleep and To Have and Have Not and Only Angels Have Wings. You can feel him working with the actors and developing situations and letting them kind of like play out and working with the writers on the set, and, you know, but you know, he's kind of an exception to the rule, I would say. Up through, say, the 50s. In the 50s, things really started to change. You know, the way that Nicholas Ray made movies is very different from the way that Hitchcock and Lubitsch and people like that made movies, and William Wyler. And I think that when Truffaut's making movies, he's making movies in France, but he's not doing it within any kind of studio system. Those films are made independently, just as Godard's were, and just as Rivette's were, and, you know, So it's a very different set of circumstances. That was an artistic revolution, the French New Wave, and there were certain producers who got behind it and paid for it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
So it's different. I think that it's very funny, though, that remark that Hitchcock makes where he says, you know, I'm like the old lady with the Boy Scouts. You know, the character wants to take me one way and I don't want to go that way. You
right.
know, but then his sense of character and what it is to be a character and what it is to be a human being is so particular that he's already doing that, I think. I mean, in other words, yes, he's making suspense films. Yes, his films are very, very suspenseful. But I feel that there's a consistency in the characterization throughout. He doesn't, his move, you know, people's behavior doesn't turn on a dime and feel unmotivated in a way that feels unmotivated and that's suiting the story the way that it does in a lot of modern movies, I have to say.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Now, as you said, you have a number of extraordinary filmmakers who are the commenters in this documentary, Hitchcock Truffaut, and they comment on the films of each of these. It seemed to me, I don't know if this was accurate or not, because I'm more familiar with the work of Hitchcock than Truffaut, it seemed to me there was a bit more of a focus by your commenters on Hitchcock than Truffaut, but they were, especially Hitchcock, very influential. And I was wondering if you could talk about the influence of Hitchcock on the people you chose. Did you choose them because they were particular lovers of Hitchcock?
No, I didn't. I chose them because they're all directors whose work I admire. I chose them because they're directors who have a desire to share the particulars of their art form and who can think and speak extemporaneously and who don't get in front of a camera and give canned answers. And the reason that I know that about these guys is because in pretty much every case, they're people that I know. I mean, you know, Marty Scorsese and I have worked together for a very long time in a variety of different ways. Arnaud Desplechin is a very close friend. I worked on a film with his called Jimmy T. Olivier Assayas is an old friend. I've known Fincher and James Gray. You know, I mean, they're just... So I knew that they were people who would be able to speak, as I said, you know, articulately, passionately, and that they'd be well-informed. And I didn't necessarily want people who were obviously influenced by Hitchcock. On the contrary, I wanted people who could just... I mean, I obviously wanted people who admired him. I didn't want anybody to be in the movie who was going to say, oh, I think Hitchcock's really overrated. That seems... That would have been kind of dopey.
Right.
But I definitely... you know, influence is a tricky thing. It's a much more complex thing than it appears to be. I think that in the case of Hitchcock, it's very complex because his influence, the effect that he had on movies is so great that you almost can't quantify that effect. It's almost impossible to describe. It's like, you know, the only other person I can think of who had that great an effect is D.W. Griffith, I suppose, you know, at the beginning, of cinema. But I think in Hitchcock's case, when you see movies that are consciously patterned after Hitchcock, generally that's what people mean when they say influenced by. And they're generally kind of unsatisfying. But when I'm looking at, say, Marty's movies or Truffaut's own movies, I can feel the presence of Hitchcock without seeing it kind of like quoted directly.
Yeah, I mean, there was one filmmaker, I believe it was the Japanese filmmaker, Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who said something, I'm going to paraphrase incorrectly here, but something like, I so admire his work that I won't imitate it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I agree.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I agree with the impulse, because you can't imitate work. If you're imitate, I mean, yes, you can imitate work, but if, only if you go into it with the spirit of saying, I think I'll try this, without doing it slavishly. If you do anything slavishly, then you're already putting a limitation on yourself. I mean, the great exception, obviously, in this sense, is Brian De Palma, who really built his own cinema out of Hitchcock's cinema. You know, it's almost like Hitchcock was a planet and Brian De Palma constructed a moon to circle around it, you know. But
interesting, yeah.
It's his own universe. You know, I mean, I'm mixing my metaphors here, moon, planet, universe. But it's his own particular world. It's very unusual. It's almost, you know, he's unlike any other filmmaker that I can really think of.
Now, how did it affect you to make this film?
You know, I think that as I've gotten older, I've come to realize that there's no such thing as, let's say, you know, a last stop when it comes to historical consciousness. And what I mean by that is, in the 90s, when Marty, you know, after Marty had started the Film Foundation, and the consciousness that films needed to be restored and preserved was really, you know, becoming more and more clearer and clearer to people. They understood. People just didn't understand. They didn't get it at first. They were like, what? Films have to be preserved? I thought that they just were. They didn't understand that such a thing as, you know, the negative of Citizen Kane burning in a studio fire could actually happen. It just didn't occur to anybody. And they and I think that people kind of thought, oh, well, you know, it's like the laws of, you know, it's like Hobbesian thing, you know, the good movies will last. Well, guess what? That doesn't happen. And then, you know, along with that, it sort of seemed like, well, now people will understand, you know, that the people who are really great are really great, and, you know, they'll stop. Everybody's gotten the point, and that's terrific. Well, you know, it just doesn't happen. It never happens that way. People always, and so within a few years, I started to realize, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm confronted with a group of people who think that their idea of an old movie is Pulp Fiction. And, you know, they don't know who François Truffaut is, or Alfred Hitchcock, or, you know, I mean, you know, he's a name that at this point, not, and I'm talking, you know, that was like 20 years ago already. At this point, they're names that people know, but they don't really know the work. A lot of people, some people do. And so, you know, I think it's at the same time, you know, you go to the movies now and there's, you're apt to see a movie that's just completely disconnected from any sense of film history at all and any sense of, you know, artistry. I think people make movies in such a way that they feign a kind of naive approach, that they don't, that's not really theirs, that they're afraid of looking too sophisticated or something. It's a very odd thing that happens. You know, I feel like a lot of movies are just kind of grabbed with a cameraman that's shooting handheld, and then they're handed over to an editor and be at the premiere. So I guess that when I was offered the chance to make this movie, I jumped at it for a lot of reasons. I was really into the challenge of making a movie about, based on audio tapes. I also, you know, Hitchcock has meant so much to me since for almost my entire life. Truffaut meant a great deal to me when I was young, and I still, you know, am very, he does now in a different way, and I still remember the shock I felt the day that I turned on the radio and heard that he had died. And the exchange between the two of them is so moving and so different from the book, by the way, in the recorded conversations, that I was, you know, those were all really, really compelling factors. But I think even, you know, just as powerful a factor for me is that I wanted to talk about filmmaking itself as a as a subject, and as a subject that's worthy of discussion, and not just discussion, but celebration and, you know, passing on to others, and as opposed to just a vehicle for conveying, like, you know, important themes, quote unquote. You know, that's where everybody seems to be at the moment.
Interesting.
You know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're talking about the film Hitchcock Truffaut. It opens tonight at the CCA here in Santa Fe. They're on the web at ccasantafe.org. Kent Jones is writer and director of the film. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Oh, my pleasure.